CGTV.
Morning.
Morning. Here you are.
I'm going to propose something to you today that will seem outrageous. I believe it's a thought that maybe you've never thought before. I've thought it before, but I haven't said it yet. Maybe I've barely thought it. Maybe it's just been in there brewing for a while. But today I'm going to tell it to you, and I think it's going to be a shocking new revelation. Maybe not. But first, I would like to tell you to go to the video link below. Rodney Pierce and I put out a video on Sunday called Sin Works for Good. We talk about a radical revelation. I never know what tape Rodney's going to put out on any given Sunday, so I'm excited, just like you, to see what it's going to be. And I saw the title of it, and I didn't remember giving it or where I gave it. As I listened to it, I realized it was 1996 in South Carolina, so we're 25 years ago. But anyway, watch that. It's something you have to send to everyone that you know. Sin works for good. I thought it was, here's another talk on sin. I've said it all before, but there are things in that video that I haven't said in a long time that it just turns the common commentators' thoughts on Romans upside down. Romans, I'll just put this in a nutshell. The book of Romans, especially chapters 6, 7, and 8, are nothing about how not to sin. That's the way the Christian world takes it. God is so concerned that we not sin, and so Paul's telling you how not to sin. No, Romans 6, 7, and 8 are needed instruction for what to do after you sin. Because it is then that Satan is going to attack you to dare you that you've been justified, dare you to even think that you're justified, to make you doubt your relationship with God and God's relationship with you. And Paul is building a garrison against the accusations of Satan concerning sin. So Romans 6, 7, and 8 is not about how not to sin. It's how to think once you have sinned. I'll leave it at that. Go to the link below and send it to everyone that you know. First Corinthians chapter 1, verse 25. For the stupidity of God is wiser than humans, and the weakness of God is stronger than humans. What a simple statement, but what profound implications. One of the main objections against God is that he's not very smart. If you can believe this, and you know it's true, humans think themselves to be smarter than God. And God purposely tempts them in that direction. How? Because he does things that are so foolish and so ridiculous and that look so weak that the humans among us who are wise in our own in their own estimation, they think they're smarter than God. They see what God does, and they think, wow, God is really goofy. I'm thinking of events like Noah's Ark. You know, it's a kid's story. You got a beautiful little illustrations, kiddie illustrations of the boat, the big boat, and the animals go in the boat two by two, and Noah floats on the water. And while all the inhabitants of the earth are destroyed, the Bible stories don't really mention that. Don't want to really emphasize that part of it. The billions of people died. Not exactly a happy Bible story for children an hour before bed, but oh, and then there's the general, Gideon, who takes the army of Midian with 200 men screaming with lamps and smashing them. It's totally ridiculous. And of course, David with a slingshot. And people look at this and they think God is really kind of stupid, because they assume this, that God is trying to look smart and failing. That's what people think. They think that God is trying to look smart, but he's failing. This is a snare that God has set up. God is setting up all these people, and they are falling into the snare. And the snare is this, that God is purposely doing stupid things. I'm reading it in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 25. For the stupidity of God is wiser than humans. I'm going to propose something to you soon. Hang in for it. Hang in for it. So God knows that Noah's Ark is stupid. He knows that a teenage boy destroying the champion of the Philistines with a slingshot is stupid. He knows that Gideon defeating an army by yelling and screaming and breaking lamps to scare off an army that actually works. He knows it's stupid. He knows that calling people like us who have no reputation, no degrees from theological seminaries, he knows that's stupid. And he's doing it to snare these people. Because God himself states that his stupidity is wiser than humans. So, whatever ultimate accomplishment can be called upon by human beings, whether it's the superconductor, fusion, nuclear energy, whatever, it's all, the Noah's Ark is more intelligent than that. Gideon is more intelligent than that. Whatever great wisdom humanity thinks they've come up with. Well, look at Einstein, E equals MC squared. I don't even know what that means. But apparently it's very smart. Gideon is smarter than that. Noah is smarter than that. And there are any number of examples of God purposely trapping people. Purposely trapping the wise, the so-called wise, in their own pseudo-wisdom. They will see the truth someday. And the other clause here, and the weakness of God is stronger than humans. The weakness of God is definitely demonstrated with his son on the cross. Who would do that to accomplish a great thing? And yet, that is stronger. Jesus, naked on the stake, the laughingstock of the intelligentsia of the day. That's stronger than anything man has come up with. Whether it's a pickup truck, or a tank, or a fighter jet, or a rocket, whatever. Supercomputers, the cross is stronger than any of that. Stronger than an atom bomb. How can the cross be stronger than an atom bomb? And yet it is. All right, here's the thing. Look around you at the creation. I always talk about the marvels of creation, the beauty of the in the eye of an animal, that ball of hydrogen up in the sky just hanging there, invisible, with invisible support. It's the support of God. Through him all things consist. When we look at the rainbow, we look at how God waters the earth, causes plants to grow for us to eat. Yeah, a farmer puts a seed in the ground, and he makes sure that that seed gets sunlight and moisture, but he has no freaking idea how it grows. No freaking idea. The miracle of life. I just swatted a bug out here a few minutes ago. It was a big bug. I don't know if it's one of those palmetto bugs. I don't know, but they fly around and they irritate the crap out of you. I had to squash it. I don't like to kill anything by squashing. And whenever you squash a bug, you get some liquid that comes out, some goo. It's like the life is in the goo. The life of God was somehow in that goo. I mean, how big can the brain of an ant be? That's not even a brain. It's not an organ. It's goo. The insects run on goo. And all these miracles happen within the goo. That the ant knows how to store food. The ant knows how to carry a brick. You get 1,000 of them together, they can carry a frickin' brick. I don't know. They're just amazingly wonderful and strong to the point that Solomon mentions them. Tells humans to take a look at the ant. Act like the ant and you'll be smarter. Another one of my favorite Mark Twain quotes when he says, I would compare humans to ants, except I don't wish to do a disfavor to the ants. What if, ladies and gentlemen, what if everything we see, all the marvels of the human body, the marvel of bug goo, the marvel of the goo brains of ants, all the way up to the sun and to the planets and the beauty of God. What if all that we see is only the stupidity of God? What if this is only the stupidity of God? What if God hasn't even revealed his wisdom yet? And we look all over the creation and we go, oh, the wisdom of God, the glory of God. Yes, well, it's all true. But what if that's actually God's stupidity? Can you imagine what God's wisdom looks like? The world we're going to, the celestial world, when God drops all the facades, he drops all the traps, and he says to us, as we're rising to meet Christ in the air, you think you've seen my wisdom? Huh, ladies and gentlemen, you haven't seen anything yet. Wow. I can't say anything more than that at this time.